Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge. Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI.
Yeah.
Okay, welcome everyone to the deep dive. Today, we're really opening a window onto, well, the deepest, maybe the strangest levels of reality.
Definitely strange. And we've got a fascinating guide for this journey.
We absolutely do. We're diving into John Polkinghorne's conceptual guide, Quantum Theory. A very short introduction.
Yeah, and it's such a crucial dive, you know, because quantum mechanics, it's not just some obscure physics thing tucked away in a lab.
Okay.
It's really a revolutionary worldview. And for anyone curious, Polkinghorne's book is, I think, the definitive roadmap. It explains why this theory just forces us to abandon that old, comfortable, intuitive idea of a predictable, deterministic universe.
Right, that sort of clockwork universe picture.
Exactly, that picture is just shattered.
So our mission today is pretty straightforward, really. We want to quickly get a handle on the core concepts, superposition, uncertainty, entanglement, all those bizarre ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe more importantly, we want to understand the philosophical fallout. You know, what does it all mean? Why is reality way down deep, so subtle, so interconnected, and, well, fundamentally unpredictable?
That's the core question. This is where that old clockwork universe model officially, you know, bites the dust.
And to really feel the weight of this book, you kind of have to understand the author, John Polkinghorne.
Absolutely. He wasn't just any academic. He was a powerhouse in theoretical physics, professor of mathematical physics at Cambridge, fellow of the Royal Society.
I mean, the absolute peak of the scientific establishment back in the 60s and 70s.
Right. He was right there at the cutting edge.
But then his life takes this incredible, almost unbelievable turn, which makes his perspective so unique, doesn't it?
It really does. In 1979, he basically resigns this incredibly prestigious professorship.
Walks away from it all.
Yeah. Walks away from a career most physicists would, frankly, give anything for.
Yeah.
And he does it to train for the Anglican priesthood.
Just think about that pivot for a second. From leading physicist to priest.
It fundamentally changed his lens, you see. He didn't just stop thinking about quantum theory, but he started seeing it not just through the math, but as this profound window into the fundamental nature of reality, as he put it.
Wow.
He kept all the scientific rigor, of course, but he married it with this deep, philosophical, almost spiritual inquiry. He started asking, okay, what does all this weird physics actually mean for how we understand existence itself? Consciousness, time.
He really does sound like the perfect interpreter, especially for those of us who are scientifically curious, but maybe, you know, a bit intimidated by the heavy mathematics.
Exactly. He bridges that gap beautifully.
So let's look at the book's central argument then. What's the big shift he's trying to get across?
Well, he argues that quantum mechanics really finalizes this move away from the classical world picture. You know, the universe as a perfect machine, predictable parts, deterministic laws, everything neatly separated.
Like billiard balls on a table.
Precisely. And it moves us towards a quantum reality that's intrinsically uncertain, deeply interconnected, and let's face it, just stubbornly counterintuitive. It defies our everyday common sense.
And what's fascinating, as he points out, is that physicists didn't choose this weirdness. It wasn't some philosophical preference.
Not at all.
It was forced on them by experiments, by what Polkinghorne calls these stubborn experimental puzzles. They thought classical physics was basically done and dusted in the 19th century.
It's just tying up loose ends, they thought.
And then these couple of really strange problems popped up that just wouldn't go away.
The first one was the black body radiation problem. Classical physics predicted that if you heat something up, it should radiate infinite energy at high frequencies in the ultraviolet range.
Which is obviously absurd.
Right. They called it the ultraviolet catastrophe. It threatened to just completely undermine everything they thought they knew about energy and radiation.
And the second puzzle.
That was the photoelectric effect.
Yeah.
You shine light on metal and electrons pop out. But the weird thing was, it only happened if the light reached a certain frequency, a certain color, basically. Not just if the light was really bright. Intensity didn't matter as much as frequency.
Mm. So classical wave theory couldn't explain that threshold.
Couldn't explain it at all. And to solve these two problems, physicists had to introduce concepts that were just, well, bizarre. They fundamentally broke the classical view of reality.
Concepts like energy coming in packets, light acting like a particle.
Exactly. Wave-particle duality, superposition, entanglement, all these core quantum ideas emerge from trying to solve those puzzles. So the book's goal is pretty ambitious, really.
Which is?
To replace that old, closed, machine-like image of the universe with something much more dynamic, relational, and fundamentally open. It aims to equip you, the listener, with a genuinely new worldview.
Okay, let's dive into those core concepts then. Starting right at the beginning, with the birth of the quantum idea itself.
Right. So the solution to that ultraviolet catastrophe came from Max Planck. And apparently, he was quite reluctant about it.
Really? He wasn't convinced himself.
Initially, no. He proposed that energy doesn't flow continuously like water from a tap. Instead, it comes in these little discrete, countable packets, like tiny marbles of energy.
He called them quanta, right?
So the word quanta. At first, it was seen almost like a mathematical trick, just something to make the equations work for black body radiation.
But then Einstein came along.
Yes. Einstein took Planck's trick incredibly seriously. He used it to explain that other puzzle, the photoelectric effect. He suggested light itself isn't just a wave, but it's actually made of these particle-like quanta, what we now call photons.
So suddenly, light, which everyone knew was a wave from centuries of experiment.
Yeah, proving to be a wave.
Was now also behaving like a stream of particles.
Bingo.
Yeah.
And that's the birth of wave-particle duality. This absolutely fundamental, weird idea that things at the quantum level can be both waves and particles, depending on how you look at them.
And the best way to really visualize this, or at least grapple with it, is the famous double slit experiment.
Always the double slit. It's the classic illustration.
So you fire particles, let's say electrons, one by one towards a barrier with two narrow slits in it. Now, common sense, classical thinking tells you that each electron particle should go through one slit or the other, right? And they should hit the detector screen behind the barrier in two distinct bands, basically lining up behind the slits.
Like firing tiny paintballs through two holes, you'd expect two splatters.
Exactly. But that is absolutely not what happens.
No. What you actually see when you let the electrons build up over time is an interference pattern.
Like ripples in a pond overlapping.
Precisely. It's that classic pattern of alternating bright and dark stripes. And that pattern is the unmistakable signature of a wave, something that must have spread out, gone through both slits simultaneously, and interfered with itself.
Wait, wait. A single electron, an indivisible particle, going through both slits at the same time.
It sounds impossible, doesn't it? But that's what the pattern implies. And here's the kicker.
There's more.
Oh, yeah. If you try to be clever and put detectors at the slits to see which slit each electron goes through.
Catch it in the act.
Right. The moment you observe which path it takes, the interference pattern vanishes completely.
And you just get the two simple bands, like the paintballs.
Exactly. It snaps back to behaving like a simple particle. It's as if the very act of measuring, of observing, forces the electron to stop being this spread-out wave and become a definite particle at a definite location.
The universe seems to know we're looking.
It's profoundly weird. And that paradox leads us straight into the next core concept. Superposition.
Okay, superposition. What's the idea there?
The idea is that before you make that measurement, the electron, or any quantum system, isn't in just one state. It's not at position A or position B.
It's somewhere else.
It's actually in a combination of all its possible states simultaneously. It exists as a mixture, a superposition of possibilities, going through slit one and slit two at the same time.
Okay, my brain hurts already. How do we even describe that?
Mathematically, we use something called the wave function. You might have heard of the Schrodinger equation. That's what describes how this wave function evolves.
And the wave function tells us.
Crucially, it doesn't tell us where the particle is. It tells us the probability of finding the particle in any particular state if we were to measure it. It's a map of potentiality.
So it's like a cloud of possibilities rather than a definite thing.
That's a great way to put it. A cloud of possibilities existing all at once. Before you look, the electron is just this haze of potential.
And then we measure it.
And boom! The collapse of the wave function happens. The act of measurement somehow forces the system to ditch all those other possibilities and choose just one definite state. The potentiality instantly becomes a concrete actuality.
The cloud solidifies into a point.
Exactly. And this is the measurement problem, one of the deepest mysteries in quantum physics. How does this collapse happen? What constitutes a measurement? It's the issue that leads to thought experiments like Schrodinger's famous and rather morbid cat.
Ah, yes. The cat that's both dead and alive until someone opens the box.
Precisely. It highlights the sheer absurdity from a classical viewpoint of this superposition idea when scaled up.
So if reality at its base is just this probabilistic haze of potentiality until measured, that really does pull the rug out from under classical determinism, doesn't it?
Completely. And this death of determinism is really cemented by Werner Heisenberg's famous uncertainty principle.
Right. And Polkinghorne really stresses this point. The uncertainty isn't just because our measuring tools are clumsy or we're not clever enough.
No, absolutely not. It's not a limitation of technology. It's baked into the very fabric of reality. It's fundamental.
What does it actually state?
The classic example involves pairs of properties, what they call complementary variables, like a particle's position and its momentum, which is its mass times velocity.
Yeah.
The uncertainty principle states that you simply cannot know both of these properties with perfect simultaneous precision. There is an inherent trade-off.
So the more accurately you measure its position,
the less precisely you can possibly know its momentum, and vice versa. Measuring one inevitably disturbs the other in a fundamental way. It's not just that you don't know it. The particle doesn't possess a perfectly definite position and a perfectly definite momentum at the same time.
Wow. So if the universe, right down in its most basic level, has this built-in fuzziness, if we can never, even in principle, know the exact starting conditions of everything, the precise position and momentum of every particle,
then what happens to prediction?
Right. The whole classical dream of a perfectly predictable future just dissolves. If you can't know the input with perfect accuracy, you can't calculate the output with certainty.
Exactly. The future isn't predetermined in the old clockwork sense. It must be, in some deep way, fundamentally open. There's an inherent unpredictability woven into the universe.
Okay, so reality is fuzzy, it's probabilistic, the future is open. What about connections? How do different parts of this reality relate to each other?
Well, now we get to perhaps the most profound, most mind-bending, and most philosophically challenging concept of all. Entanglement.
The one Einstein famously called spooky action at a distance.
That's the one. Yeah. You really didn't like it. It seemed to violate his sense of a local, orderly universe.
So set it up for us. What is entanglement?
Okay, imagine you have two quantum particles, say, electrons that are created together in a specific way. So their properties are linked. Maybe their spins are correlated. One must be spin up if the other is spin down. But you don't know which is which initially.
They're in a superposition of both possibilities.
Exactly. They share a single combined wave function. Now, you separate these two entangled particles. You could send them light years apart, theoretically.
Okay, miles apart, galaxies apart.
Doesn't matter how far. Now, you measure the spin of particle A. Let's say you find its spin up.
Right.
Instantly, and I mean instantly, faster than light could travel between them. You know, with absolute certainty, that particle B, way over there, is spin down. Its wave function collapses into the opposite state the moment you measure A.
That. How does particle B know what happened to particle A instantaneously across that distance? It seems like faster than light communication, which Einstein said was impossible.
That was precisely Einstein's objection. It seemed spooky. He, along with others, suspected there must be some hidden information, some hidden variables that the particles carried with them from the start, like secret instructions telling them how to behave when measured.
So it wasn't spooky action, it was pre-programmed behavior.
That was the hope for classical realists. They hoped quantum mechanics was just incomplete, that there was a deeper deterministic layer underneath.
But then came John Bell.
Yes, John Bell in the 1960s. He devised a brilliant theorem, Bell's theorem, which showed that you could actually test this experimentally. You could design experiments to distinguish between genuine quantum entanglement and these hypothetical hidden variables.
And the results.
Overwhelmingly, experiment after experiment, starting with Alain Aspect in the 80s and continuing today with incredible precision, have confirmed the predictions of quantum mechanics. They've ruled out those local hidden variable theories.
So the spookiness is real.
It seems to be. The unavoidable conclusion is that the universe is non-local. Entangled particles aren't really separate things, even when they're far apart. They remain part of a single, unified, indivisible system.
Wow.
They exhibit this deep, holistic interconnectedness that just defies our everyday intuition about space and separation. It suggests that the idea of breaking everything down into independent parts reductionism fundamentally fails at the quantum level.
That's a philosophical bombshell, as you said. Okay, let's try to maybe zoom out from the specific physics now and look at the bigger picture. What are the key themes or messages that Polkinghorne wants us to take away from all this quantum weirdness?
I think the first big theme is what you could call the end of classical intuition. It's a call for intellectual humility, really.
Meaning our gut feelings are wrong.
Basically, yes. Our everyday common sense is built up from experiencing the macroscopic world, the world of chairs, tables, baseballs. Polkinghorne makes it clear that this intuition is a completely unreliable, even misleading guide when we try to understand the fundamental layer of reality. We have to be willing to let go of it.
It requires a real shift in thinking.
Definitely. The second theme flows directly from entanglement. It's holism and interconnectedness.
Being the whole picture.
Exactly. Entanglement strongly suggests that reality, at its base, isn't just a collection of separate bits and pieces. It's fundamentally unified. This challenges that deep-seated reductionist impulse to just break everything down.
And maybe it encourages us to see other complex systems differently, like ecosystems or societies.
I think that's a great reflection, seeing them not just as sums of parts, but as deeply interconnected relational wholes.
Okay, and a third theme.
A third key theme is reality as potentiality and process. Quantum mechanics shows us that reality isn't just made of static things that are. It's also fundamentally about dynamic processes and what could be.
The wave function, the cloud of possibilities.
Right. That potentiality, described by the wave function, is a crucial aspect of reality. It only transitions into definite actuality, what is, through interaction or measurement. So reality is constantly unfolding. It's process, not just state.
Which maybe encourages us to be more comfortable with ambiguity, with the unknown.
I think so. An acceptance that not everything is fixed and determined, that potential and possibility are real features of the world, and maybe of our own lives, too.
Polkinghorne really does have a knack for phrasing these big ideas in ways that stick with you. Let's maybe highlight a few of those core statements, those sort of quotes that capture the essence.
Yeah, his conceptual language is very powerful. One key one is his reality check. The fuzzy, unpredictable quantum world is the bedrock upon which the solid, reliable, classical world of our everyday experience is built.
So the strangeness isn't some weird edge case. It's the foundation of everything we think is normal and solid.
Exactly. The solidity is emergent. The fuzziness is fundamental.
What about the role of measurement?
He really emphasizes its active, even creative nature. He says something like, "The uncertainty principle tells us that a particle does not possess a definite position and a definite momentum simultaneously. These properties are only brought into being by the act of measurement itself."
So we're not just passively observing what's already there. The act of looking creates the reality we see, in a sense.
It participates in bringing potentiality into actuality. It's a profound shift from the classical idea of the detached observer.
And finally, on that spooky interconnectedness.
He sums up the impact of entanglement beautifully. The discovery of entanglement forces upon us the conclusion that the universe is characterized by a deep and spooky interconnectedness.
A single, indivisible whole, defying our sense of separation. Powerful stuff.
It really is.
Now, people listening might be thinking, okay, this is fascinating, mind-bending stuff, but it's about tiny particles. Does it actually connect to my life? Is it practical?
That's a fair question. And the answer is a resounding yes, though perhaps indirectly for most of us. The truth is, almost all of our modern technology relies fundamentally on understanding and manipulating these quantum rules.
Really? Like what?
Well, start with the device you might be listening on right now. Your smartphone, your computer. They run on transistors and semiconductors.
Okay.
The behavior of electrons and silicon that makes those tiny switches work is pure quantum mechanics. Classical physics can't explain it at all.
I never thought of my phone as a quantum device.
It absolutely is. And think about lasers, CD players, barcode scanners, fiber optics. Lasers work because of a quantum process called stimulated emission.
Right. And medical imaging.
MRI machines. They rely on manipulating the quantum spin of atomic nuclei in your body. It's an incredibly sophisticated application of quantum principles.
Okay, this is making more sense. What else?
Even something like GPS navigation, the satellites rely on incredibly precise atomic clocks.
Atomic clocks, right.
And those clocks work because the energy levels within atoms are quantized. They come in specific discrete steps, just like Planck first proposed, that allows for timekeeping accuracy that's essential for GPS to function. So, yeah, without quantum mechanics, the modern digital world, our communication, our medicine, it just wouldn't exist.
That's incredible. It's like this hidden layer running everything.
Pretty much.
And what about on a more personal philosophical level? Any takeaways there?
I think one powerful insight is about embracing ambiguity. Quantum theory really challenges that rigid black and white view of the world.
because things aren't always definitely one way or the other.
Exactly. And the fact that the universe seems fundamentally open at its core, that the future isn't rigidly predetermined. Well, that leaves room for genuine novelty, for creativity, perhaps even for free will, in a way that a purely deterministic universe wouldn't. It suggests our choices might actually matter in shaping and unfolding reality.
That's a really hopeful thought, actually. Oh. So as we wrap up, what was the most surprising or maybe engaging thing for you from revisiting Polkinghorne's perspective?
For me, I think it's the profound sense of intellectual humility it demands. Quantum mechanics is arguably the most successful scientific theory humans have ever devised, mathematically precise beyond belief.
Yeah, the predictions are stunningly accurate.
Incredibly accurate. And yet, it's surrounded by these deep, unresolved interpretive questions, Copenhagen interpretation, many worlds, Bohmian mechanics. We have this incredibly powerful mathematical tool, but we still argue intensely about what it fundamentally means.
So the mystery remains, even with the predictive power.
Precisely. And Polkinghorne, coming from both science and theology, seems comfortable with that. He shows us that rigorous analysis and profound mystery aren't enemies. They can, and perhaps must, coexist. We don't have all the answers, and maybe acknowledging that is actually the most exciting part of the scientific adventure.
That's a great point. What really stands out to me is how Polkinghorne, because of his unique background, insists that we shouldn't see the quantum weirdness as a bug, as a problem to be explained away.
But as a feature.
Exactly. As a fundamental feature of reality that we just have to accept and embrace. We need to let go of our comfortable, classical, common sense assumptions if we truly want to grasp how the universe works. It's just far stranger, far more interconnected, and ultimately far more wonderful than those old models ever allowed us to imagine.
A challenging, but ultimately enriching perspective.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.